Hey, this is Leo for Actualize.org, and today I want to have a discussion about this topic of being iconoclastic and how being the exact opposite of what everyone else is being or what everyone else is doing can actually lead to some amazing results. So, this is an interesting idea because there's a balance to be had between being conformist and then being rebellious or iconoclastic and challenging conventions just for the sake of challenging them. So when I was a kid through middle school and high school, I had a rebellious streak and really kind of an iconoclastic streak. I would call myself a proud iconoclast. But I'll give you just a quick example of how this played out. So in middle school, I used to remember I would walk up to friends in school and I would ask them this question. I would tell them, if someone gave you $1 million right now to quit school forever and you could never come back, you'd have to quit where you are right now, and this was like 8th grade. So if you quit school in 8th grade and you were never allowed to come back but you had $1 million, would you take that deal? And of course most of the kids, they hated school anyways, they'd probably quit it for $100, but of course for $1 million they all said yes. And being the kind of smartass that I was, I would insist and I would argue with them and I would say, no, I would never take that deal because the education is so much more important over the long run. Over the long run, that education is going to earn me a lot more than $1 million. So in the end, that's a poor deal to take because you could never come back and you could never get proper education. And so, yeah, I was probably a little bit smarter than most kids in terms of how I was thinking long term and all that kind of stuff. But really, I was coming at this question from a place of ego. So, you know, I wanted to prove that I was a smart ass and that I was different than everyone else. And so that's kind of why I was posing the question. That's why I was posing that answer. It was almost like I took the answer of the exact opposite what I assumed most kids would take. And so in that sense, I wasn't really coming at it from a very wise perspective. It was more of an egoic perspective. But still, the net result was actually the same. Because whether I really believed that the education was really worthwhile long term, or whether I was just doing that because I thought it was different and that's what I valued, didn't really matter, because the net result was that I started to value education. And actually what ended up happening was that I started putting a lot of energy and investment into my education. So through school I started getting good grades, studying hard, doing all that kind of stuff, and I really believed it. I wasn't just bullshitting myself. But part of the reason I was doing that was because I actually thought that it was the cool, rebellious thing to do, is to be smart, because most kids didn't want to be smart. Most kids were talking to their friends, they were slacking off, they hated homework, all that stuff. So I thought, if I want to be original, if I want to be unique, the best way to do that is to actually go in against the grain. So I actually thought that it was going to be cool, like cool in the uncool sense, to be smart. And so that's actually how I got smart, and I got an amazing education, which I'm grateful for to this day because of that. And it all came from being a little bit iconoclastic. And over the years, my iconoclasm has kind of gone down because it was kind of extreme. I found myself challenging stuff that was solid stuff. And so, where else is this applied? That was just like a little school example. Well, one other place where you really want to be unique, and sometimes you get really rewarded for going against the grain, is in business. Sometimes in business it's really important to do things differently because it's important for you to carve out your niche, and doing so reduces your competition. You don't want to be competing with a bunch of other companies within the same market. That drives down prices, that means you have to work harder. It's much better to create your own little niche, your own little area of the market that you can corner and just work on that. And usually to do that, you need to play up your business's strengths and idiosyncrasies. And so there, sometimes it's good to not do what everyone else is doing, because if you go into that popular market, that popular niche, the thing that's hot right now, that tends to, a lot of times, lead to market crashes, bubbles, or reduces pricing to the point where margins are driven down, you don't earn a lot of money, you end up working really hard, and you don't get too much for it. So that can be really good for business. Generally though, the reason that you want to be iconoclastic and you want to go against the grain is because of mediocrity. And if you think about it, if you're going to have, if you want different results than everybody else, and this was just a general rule that I followed since I was pretty young, since I was literally since middle school, was that I tend to think that if I just do things differently, I'll get different results. And the way I thought about it was just simply this, is that you have the majority of people in the world. There's like 7 billion people in the world now, and the majority of them are quite mediocre. They live boring lives. They are either poor or just above the poverty line. They're struggling to get by. A lot of them are emotionally unstable. Tons and tons of problems, and just not what I think of as when I think about myself and the way I want my life to go and the trajectory I want my life to have of awesomeness and success and financial well-being and psychological well-being, all this stuff and achievement and just satisfaction with my life. I don't picture most people as having that. So when I think about that, I start to wonder, okay, so what are they doing that puts them into mediocrity? And if they do what most people do, that puts them in mediocrity, then if I do that, that will put me in the same place. Whereas if I do something different, that will put me in a different place. Perhaps sometimes a worse place, but also perhaps a better place. So it's not always that doing something different will get you to a better place. It can actually put you in a worse place, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But some of the kind of mainstream stuff that people do also tends to be very unhealthy and bad. And so going against that grain can be very good. That's why just living by that principle of doing things differently can sometimes just blindly put you in a good position, because you start to avoid some of the problems that mainstream society has, and you start getting a different mode of thinking and a different level of success. Generally, though, the reason that you want to be iconoclastic also is because, what are the common problems that keep people in mediocrity? Well, I think some of it, obviously lack of resources and that kind of stuff in poor countries. But one of the problems, I think, is laziness and really not wanting to work hard. You can definitely see this in like mainstream American culture, where you have this this just general willingness to grasp at stuff that's easy to get or that's free. So people will go for free samples. If there's a store opening and they give out free stuff, people flock to that store. If there's if there's a big lottery to be won, it's played on the news and people go and buy tickets. And when you win the lottery, that's viewed as something amazing. And people ask each other questions like, well, what if you won the lottery tomorrow? What would you do? Oh, I'd quit my job. I'd do this. I'd do that. I'd go for a vacation. So like this kind of idea that, you can get free stuff, or they can go gambling, get something for free. Or really another way that it's manifest online, especially if you've done any sort of business research, or you try to start a business, or you're familiar with online businesses in any way, you know the get-rich-quick schemes. I mean, you'll even see these advertised on TV with real estate and stuff like that. Basically, that get-rich-quick scheme, which is like a quick little business that you can start at home that will earn you tons of money with no investment, no time investment. You're going to be only working 4 hours a week, and you're going to get all the money in the world, and it's going to be easy and effortless, convenience of your own home. You don't have to go to a boss. So, we've all heard this common story, and sometimes even you're driving on the roads and you see signs that are saying stuff like, work from home and earn $200 an hour, stuff like that. So that is trying to appeal to that mainstream desire to get something easy with low energy, but get a lot for it. And of course, that appeals to all of us on some level, because we want to be efficient with our use of energy and resources. That's just something we as living organisms do. That's kind of programmed into our DNA. But also, that can actually backfire. And I think in mainstream society, that actually does backfire more often than it doesn't, because at this point, human society has developed to such an extent that, it's life is becoming easy. It's almost becoming too easy. It's easy to get your food. It's easy to get your water. It's easy to really to earn money. It's easy to get a job. All this stuff is really programmed into society for you, so you don't have to risk life and limb to do that stuff. You just have to put a little bit of effort forward, and if you follow the rules in society, generally you'll turn out fine. And people even fail at that, but that's mostly because they start taking it for granted. Common example is just with health, like the way that people abuse their health by eating junk food because it's so easy, it's so convenient, so much energy, so much calories. in a little bite-sized piece of candy bar or cheeseburger or whatever it is that you eat, but it's not very nutritious for you. Mainstream society encourages it. It's easy to get it, but it's almost like we're getting too lazy. That's why half the country is overweight or obese, is because it's too easy to get that stuff, and it's like that laziness, that not wanting to work hard is starting to backfire. So that's one of the ways that you can become a little bit contrarian and tackle some of those problems. So by tackling that idea of not working hard and being lazy, that's definitely going to help to get you out of mediocrity. You know, stuff like wanting easy money, wanting fame and success, all this stuff is just typical of what I'm talking about. Another thing that I really like to just ponder is this idea of herd mentality and some of the pros and cons that go along with herd mentality. So really, herd mentality leads to groupthink and some of the evils of social conformity that come with that. And there are other problems. So, you know, what are the problems with groupthink and social conformity and herd mentality? Well, one of the things is that it kills originality. And generally in the marketplace, if you're doing business or you're trying to provide value to an employer, originality is something that's desired. Especially now when most jobs are service type jobs. So no longer are we doing much manufacturing, especially in America. It's more about your creative output. So, you know, how creative can you be in your business? How creative can you be in your work, in your career, whatever it is that you're doing? And how original can you be? How innovative can you be? To be innovative and original means you have to think differently, by definition, than everyone else, because you need to be able to explore the regions of possibility that other people haven't gotten to yet. And that usually requires a different mode of thinking. So in that sense, if you're thinking with the herd, if you're doing what everyone else is doing, it's hard to be original, hard to be a discoverer, hard to be an explorer, and then you don't get the benefits from being an explorer and a discoverer and an innovator. And a lot of times, some of the best results in business come from doing just that. So that's one way that it's good not to engage in herd mentality. So a lot of times, also, following the herd simply makes ideas untenable or unfeasible. So, you know, what's an idea of this? Well, some common examples are like investing in stocks. Like if everybody invested in the same stock and everyone tried to get rich off of it, it just wouldn't work in theory, because to make money on a stock, someone else has to be losing some money there, right? And it's the disparity between buyers, between buying it at a low price and then selling it at a higher price, which means that basically you're offloading that value onto somebody else and then you're cashing the difference. Well, like hedge funds, for example, or actually successful mutual funds succumb to this problem. When a mutual fund or hedge fund becomes very successful and it starts taking on too many new investors, what ends up happening is that really it becomes too big for its own success. So it becomes unsustainable. When everyone tries to be successful at the exact same thing, usually it doesn't happen, because you can't distribute, you don't have enough resources to distribute across the whole, across all the players in that game equally. So, you know, if we wanted to make everybody in the world a billionaire, well, to make 7 billion people in the world billionaires, it probably just wouldn't work out. The math wouldn't work out, right? Society just wouldn't work out. Why? Because, you know, someone has to be doing the low-level grunt work. Like, someone has to be cleaning the toilets. Someone has to be doing your plumbing. Someone has to be doing all the stuff that you would never want to do if you were a billionaire. So if everyone became billionaires instantly, it wouldn't be tenable, really. You'd have to devalue the money or something like that, or you need like robots to be doing all the grunt work. So you can't just instantly make everyone a success. There has to be some disparities. You know, don't make that a limiting belief on yourself, but I think generally if we're talking about large numbers, then that's true. Also, that's why, for example, like pyramid schemes, like they might start to work at first, and then eventually they have to die, they have to collapse, because it's unsustainable. You'd need an infinite number of new players coming into the game to keep the pyramid scheme going. So I find that very very germane to business, because in business, once too many players get into a market, the market can get oversaturated, and even if you can get some success there, it's not the kind of success that you really want to be going after, because you're working very hard for it and getting very little in return, because there's too many people trying to divide the pie. So the pie pieces become very, very small very fast. You know, what's another example of where being kind of contrarian and iconoclastic is good? Well, I think just in how you are as a person and how you behave and what your personality is like, it's good to be original and idiosyncratic. So, you know, when I was younger in school, I used to think and I used to look at people and I used to evaluate them based on their mannerisms. And I would look at, you know, the mannerisms of my professors or my teachers, kids around me, and I would kind of judge them for it. I'd be like, oh, that's, you know, that's quirky what he does with his hands. That's weird. Like the way he laughs, his laugh is kind of funny. You know, his hairstyle is kind of funny. Like this kind of stuff, like these things that would kind of make people stand out. I would tend to poke fun of people in my mind about that. And my ideal at that point was kind of like, well, I'm going to try to reduce as many mannerisms as I can within myself. So I don't have those quirks. And, you know, as I got older, I started to realize that those idiosyncrasies are actually kind of good, because what they do is they kind of build your personality and they make you stand out and they make you a little bit more magnetic. Because if you numb down and polish out all the mannerisms that you have, everything about you that's kind of unique, then you just become very vanilla. You have no spice, you have no flavor to who you are. And it also doesn't make you very happy, because those quirks, expressing those quirks is an expression of yourself, and it usually feels good to do that, and suppressing them can be kind of limiting and soul draining, or at least just not, you know, you don't get that sense of thrill that you do with really sharing who you are with other people, and it doesn't really make you very, very lovable. I guess what happens is that if you polish out that stuff, you become very homogenized. So it becomes easy for everybody to like you a little bit, or at least to be just kind of agreeable with you. But it's hard for people then to really love you or gravitate towards you. So you're not very polarizing. It's like you're good for everybody. You're just very generic. You're kind of the lowest common denominator that people will accept. Sometimes it's good to be polarizing, because there's so many people in the world that you can be friends with. I mean, you're going to be the bottleneck there is just going to be the amount of time and energy that you have. So you don't need to worry about attracting thousands and thousands of people and making thousands of people happy. You really just need to worry about expressing yourself and having the people that love you really love you, and then people that hate you, if they really hate you, you shouldn't really care too much about that. So sometimes it's good to put out those idiosyncrasies and develop those mannerisms, because it builds up your personality, makes you more magnetic. And in that sense, it also makes you stand out from the herd, right? If you're just like everyone else, you tend to blend in. If there's something very unique about you, then you're going to stand out, and that can be very good for you. Also, you can stand out in bad ways, so don't, you know, everything has to be taken kind of in balance. The other problem is that, I mean, even if you wanted to eliminate mannerisms, what I found as I was trying to do this for a while is that you can't really effectively eliminate them. There's still going to be quirks about you that are there. And in fact, not having mannerisms is somewhat of a mannerism in and of itself, because most people are quirky in some ways. And if you're too vanilla, it's almost like you're going to be kind of cut and dry and a little boring. And that will become like your signature, your trademark. And that's really not a good trademark to have. So really you don't want to be vanilla. Other things, the reasons why conformity is bad. Conformity can lead to epic failures, epic financial failures. We've seen this through history. So if you're a student of history, you've seen this pan out in many, many different ways. Financial failures, from stock market crashes to real estate bubbles to pyramid schemes to gold rushes, you know, from the very real gold rushes back like in the 1850s and whatnot, to modern day gold rushes, like maybe the dot-com bubble bursting, stock market, that kind of stuff. You know, industries that become very hot, they get flooded with people, and then because there's not enough resources to go around, basically collapses, or once the resources run out, the industry collapses. You definitely saw that with the real gold rushes, where people would flock to a gold mining town, and eventually they'd strip it dry, and then people would keep coming and coming, but there was not enough gold to sustain everyone that was there. So usually only a few people made out rich, and the rest weren't better off at all for it. Same thing happened with the stock market crashes. You know, it happens repeatedly. This is not just a one-time event. You can research a whole history on how conformity leads to epic financial failures. You know, you don't want to get caught up in that. In fact, that can be really bad. If you end up getting caught up in that and blindsided by it, you can literally wipe out your entire savings and destroy your entire life. Many, many documented examples of that. You know, on the other hand, you know, we've been talking about conformity, and we've talking about how conformity can be bad. The flip side of this coin is that there is a balance, and so conformity can also be good. Groupthink does have many positive advantages. One of them, you know, is that a lot of times the herd has some mainstream tendencies that are actually really healthy and really good. So, you know, what's one example of this? Well, I'd say education. Like, if you're born in America, or most modern countries in the world, even probably the poor countries, it's like you're just expected to go to school. You know, groupthink just tells you to go to school. You have to go to school. You don't even think twice about it. You don't really even have much of a choice. And then even after school, you're generally pressured to go to college. Your parents pressure you to go, society pressures you to go, teachers pressure you to go, all the kids in your school are going. So like going to college becomes very effortless. It's not a very big decision that you have to make. Maybe for some people it is, but mostly it's like, yeah, it's a no-brainer to go to college. And probably in the end, that's a really good thing for you, is that, you know, you don't want to not have that solid base of education, which will allow you to be much more successful later on. So like that's a good example of groupthink, where you're just automatically following the herd and you're actually getting some good benefit from it. You know, other examples are sometimes that there are trends or fads that start off with groupthink, and if you're not in tune with them, a lot of times it's good to kind of see, you know, where is the herd starting to move towards. So for example, when the internet came online, you know, a lot of people started internet businesses, they started making websites, people started talking about it, stocks started becoming hot. So if you were just kind of starting to observe that trend and you were not really into the internet yet, and you started seeing that and you started following it through herd mentality, just through groupthink because everyone else was doing it, that would have actually been good for you, because there's so many great benefits from the internet. You get so much free information, much better way to shop, you can save money, you can connect with friends better, you can make money yourself through it. So all these positive benefits from the internet, which actually turns out to be very very huge permanent improvement to human society, which is not just a little quick fad, a little blip on the radar. It's here to stay. And so getting on board with that one as early as you could would have been great. So following the herd there was nice in that case. Also, like with PCs, if we go even earlier back, if you were resisting to become a PC adopter nowadays, like, you know, you need to know how to use PC, you know how to type, like that kind of stuff, following herd mentality on that is great, because you start getting all the benefits of being able to use a PC in your computer. Makes you more efficient. I mean, it's so many different benefits you get from a PC, from word processing applications to sharing stuff with friends and family to, you know, working more efficiently, having skills to get better at work, to be more efficient at work, to manage projects, emails, all that stuff. So for those examples, you know, getting on board with groupthink is good. And so, you know, I guess the way I'm going to wrap this up is to say that there is a balance that you want to have there. But in general, especially if you're talking about business, I think financial success, and you're talking about personal success and getting the kind of results that you dream of, that most people don't get, and you realize that what you want is what most people don't have and will never have, at least for the foreseeable future, then you want to start thinking about, how do I do stuff differently? You know, if everybody is saying that I should be starting an online business by doing XYZ in market ABC, then maybe that's not the best way to go. What if I kind of take some of the best lessons from that, but then actually do my own thing, do something slightly different? So at the same time, I mean, I guess the underlying point, the bottom line, is that you want to really be very conscious and use your judgment and be very aware of what the trends are, how groupthink works, and start thinking about how to be doing stuff differently. I guess my strategy, I think the ideal strategy is to do things on your own and be contrarian, but not for contrarian's sake. Do it because it makes sense to do it for you. And also, at the same time, don't turn a blind eye completely to groupthink and to trends that are happening in society or even fads, because those can be valuable indications of stuff that you should be paying attention to that's not on your radar. So use your judgment, do the stuff that you gotta do to be unique, be yourself, don't be afraid of that. Don't blend in just for the sake of blending in, peer pressure, all that bullshit. Completely unnecessary and unhealthy. But also pay attention to some of the trends, because those can alert you to some of the good stuff. And when you're using your judgment like that, I think you'll find that you'll get much better results, and you'll start to create that kind of life that few people have, because bottom line is that you start doing things differently than most people do.